Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. Whether your child is just beginning the college admission process or is already in college, this podcast is for you. You'll find food for thought and information about college and about navigating that delicate balance of guidance, involvement, and knowing when to get out of the way. Join your hosts, Vicki Nelson and Lynn Abrahams, as they share support and a celebration of the amazing experience of having a child in college.
Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. This is where we talk about all things college parenting, all things getting ready to be a college parent, and anything that might help you support your students as they look at, think about, and go to college. My name is Vicki Nelson, and I am a professor of communication and former academic advisor. I'm still an academic advisor, former director of academic advising. But more importantly, I am the parent of three daughters who have all gone to college. So I'm looking at college parenting both as a professional and having lived through it. And I'm here with my friend and colleague and co-host, Lynn Abrahams.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lynn. And I am also coming at this from two angles. Professionally, I am a learning disability specialist. I've been working with college students and their families for many, many years. And I'm also a mom of two sons who have been sort of in and out and through and around college. I have some stories to tell. Vicki has the girls and I have the boys. We kind of cover the bases.
Yeah, we do.
And we're here with a guest.
We do have a guest, and we're very excited because this guest is a friend and has a lot that she's going to be able to share with us, I think, about a lot of different things. So we want to get right to it and talk to her. Our guest is Dr. Lynn Zlotkowski, who is Director of Academic Advising at Southern New Hampshire University. And there she leads a staff of professional advisors who work with students. And Lynn has an opportunity to work with faculty and student affairs staff, administrators, and a very diverse population of students to make sure that those students get the support and the guidance that they need to succeed in college. But I want to go on a little bit, because prior to her role as Director of Academic Advising, Lynn served as Director of the Wolak Learning Center at Southern New Hampshire University, and also as Associate Dean of First Year Experience and Retention at Mount Ida College, Academic Success Coordinator and Assistant to the Dean at Curry College, and Assistant Director of the Learning Commons at Allegheny College. Her doctoral dissertation examined the transition experience of first-generation students who were Division III athletes. And I went on about all of that. Lynn's just nodding her head here, you know, more. But I wanted to include all of that because Lynn has worked at several different institutions in a number of roles, and she brings such a broad experience to the conversation we want to have with her today. Because she has several different perspectives. So we're going to grill her about all of those things. But Lynn Zlotkowski, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I feel like you, like, reading off my resume took up most of the time that we have. So, yeah.
It's been a lot.
Did we exhaust you just in talking about all the things you've done?
It's really exhausting to think about, yes. And you didn't even include everything. Like, there's so much, and it keeps going. it's so wonderful. Yeah. And I'm so happy to chat with both of you and talk about all of this.
Yeah, well, we're very excited. We haven't seen you in a little while, so we've been catching up a little bit. But so to start, I thought, Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about maybe your journey? I mean, I read all the official stuff, but you're Director of Advising now at Southern New Hampshire. And I doubt whether when you were a little girl, you said, someday I want to grow up and be a Director of Academic Advising.
So,
so can you tell us a little bit about how someone gets there?
Yeah. Exactly like you said, I did not want to be a director of advising. And you guys have heard this story. It's one of my favorite stories to tell the college students is that when I went to college, I wanted to be a DJ. And I drove my parents crazy. I drove my parents crazy. Well, I didn't want to go to college, actually. I had been following my sister, who is just a wonderful person and was a phenomenal student in high school. And I was trying to forge my own path. And that was not as a phenomenal student. And so I said that I didn't want to go to college. And I was going to keep working at the grocery store that I was working at. And I wanted to try out being a DJ. And my mom said, nope, you are very smart and you are very capable and you will enjoy learning once you find the thing that you want to learn. Like, that was my biggest problem in high school, was that I just wasn't very interested. And so, and she was right. And, so I went to SUNY Fredonia, which is one of the state universities in New York, for super cheap, and didn't have a wonderful start, because I didn't totally want to be there at that point and I couldn't see the other side of it yet. So I didn't have a great start, but I was very involved on campus and I played college lacrosse. So I was a Division III student athlete. I was involved in our radio station because I still wanted to be a DJ. And I was very involved in athletics and intramurals and recreation. And I was also very involved in our party scene at Fredonia. So I can still tell you that a 30 pack of Busch Light in 1999 in Fredonia, New York was only $20.
The things we remember from college.
So I went through, my 4 years, and at one point I was a tour guide for our admissions office, and it was one of the admissions counselors who said to me, "What are you going to do after you graduate?" And this was December of my senior year. And I was like, I literally have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. And she said, "I feel like you'd be really good at working at a college." And that was the first time that I was like, oh my God, I'm looking around and I was like, people work here. They get paid to do this. This is crazy. And so I applied to one graduate school, and it was the one that admissions counselor went to, Buffalo State College. And I'm from Buffalo, New York. And so I was like, okay, I'll move back home. And I went to grad school, and then I thought I was going to work in athletics. And so my first job out of grad school, I was at Allegheny, but I was the head women's lacrosse coach and I worked in residence life. It was a dual position. So I also got a lot of experience in, you know, going to the hospital with students at 2 o'clock in the morning and working on roommate conflicts and being a coach, right? Recruiting students to come to my school, seeing my athletes through both a really rigorous academic environment and an incredibly competitive athletic environment. But I did that for a couple of years and it was exhausting to be at RA programming until 10 o'clock and have to be in a team lift at 5:30 in the morning. Was not, even for someone who was only 24, was not great. And a position opened up in our Learning Commons at Allegheny, and I knew the director of the Learning Commons because we had gone to college together. And she said, "Yeah, I think you'd be really good at this. And you've said that you're not really feeling the athletics thing. Why don't you give this a whirl? Because there's a lot of transferable skills in working with students in that kind of that coaching capacity, that academic coaching capacity." And so I took that leap and I decided to try it, figuring I could go back to athletics if it didn't work out, and ended up loving it. Like, I loved working with students in that way and working with our underdog students, right? Like our students who maybe they'd already had a rough academic semester, or they came in not as prepared for the level of academic rigor at Allegheny. And so helping them kind of through that transition. I also oversaw our orientation program when I was in that. And so I got to work with the whole campus on developing our 5-day orientation program for our incoming students, which was so fun. Parent programming, student programming, working with the RAs and the orientation leaders. Like, it was really wonderful. It was, and so then from there, it was like, okay, like I'm into this academic gig. I'm really liking this. And then I moved up to New England and got the job at Curry very fast. I got that job in like a week. And then moved up to New England a week and a half later and worked at Curry and started to do some really get into, when I started getting at Curry, was really using data to inform our practice and using data to inform our retention initiatives and supporting students in the absolute best way, finding the students who you know, statistically, we knew they were going to struggle when they came in. So like, let's get ahead of this and let's talk to them before that even happens. And let's be more proactive. And then from Curry, I went to Mount Ida and really got to do that on a larger scale. And then now at Southern New Hampshire, which I'm only on campus, people sometimes are like think that I like oversee advising for all of SNU, and I have nothing to do with our online. We got 150,000 students and 800 advisors over there who I don't have anything to do with. I just work with our 3,000 campus students in our advising office on campus. And so now I'm able to continue taking all those things that I learned at all those stops along the way and enact them on a larger scale and really help all of our students.
You know, I want to ask you a little bit about advising because, I mean, that kind of shifts right into that. First of all, I want to say I love listening to people's stories and how they get from one place to another. Because I also started in, I started in music therapy. And I ended up in, you know, working with students with learning differences. I love that students who come into college often don't know what they want.
And it's crazy and that anyone thinks time. They do.
I know. And it takes time to
figure
it out.
I wanted to be a DJ.
And I wanted to be a music therapist. So, but anyways.
I want to jump in on this because I think, you know, one of the things, Lynn, I love the, see, I've got Lynn and Lynn.
Yeah, I know. Here. That's a problem.
One of the things you talked about in moving from athletics to the learning commons was about the transferable skills.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I think for students and parents to just kind of keep focusing on that because everybody's path these days goes every which way.
So twisty-turny. Right.
Yeah. And those things that you can carry with you are really important.
So yeah. I want to ask a little bit about the role of advising, though. Mm. You know, different colleges do it in different ways.
Oh, yeah.
But there are some real differences between high school and college. So kids who are coming into college might expect something very different than what they're getting. And parents may expect something different. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's not your guidance counselor.
Right. No, it's not your guidance counselor. And it is, I mean, guidance counselors have requirements and they've got, I mean, some of them have caseloads of, you know, 500
huge
kids. I didn't even go to that big of a high school, but I only saw my guidance counselor twice a year. And that was a win because I didn't want her to compare me to my sister too much. But it depends on the student, honestly, and it depends on the parent. And I really want to acknowledge the fact that folks coming with different backgrounds have very different experiences in their high schools, right? And it depends on if you're at a private boarding school, you have a college, you know, a college counselor who's really in it with you. Whereas if you're at a school that's maybe a little bit more underfunded, it is one guidance counselor for maybe 800 kids or 1,000 kids. So it just kind of depends. And then what you're coming into college with can really dictate what you need from your advisor, I think, in college. And like you said, Lynn, I mean, there's just different kinds of advising everywhere. So all the places I've worked, right? Allegheny was strict faculty advising from start to finish, only faculty members. When I was at Curry, it was strict faculty advising, but with a centralized advising office as kind of a safety net and a central point of contact for all of those faculty advisors and for students. When I was at Mount Ida, we had professional advisors in the first year, and then they would transfer to faculty advisors in their second year. And now that I'm at Southern New Hampshire, we're moving into this model where every student will have a professional advisor and a faculty advisor for all 4 years. So it's combining kind of everything. And again, I think advising can be, it's depending on what a student needs and where a student is coming from and their demographic information, what kind of cultural and social capital they're already bringing into college with them. Mm-hmm. I say all the time, I'm also a parent and I have a six-year-old who just started kindergarten this year. And so I'll tell you, it is like seeing like, talk eventually about communication and even the communication between him being in daycare and him being in kindergarten. I feel like I don't know anything that's going on. I don't know what's happening during the day anymore. And then I also have two stepkids, one of whom is a junior in high school and really starting to think about college. But I use her as an example all the time. Like she will go into college and not need an academic advisor, to be totally honest, because of the practical support that she has at home. When she wants to change her major, she's going to call me first. She's going to call me and her mom first.
I would too.
Yeah. Like she's not, and I'm going to say, you really should talk to your advisor about this. But then I also see so many students who, you know, their parents didn't go to college. And so they don't necessarily understand that navigation system, and they really rely on the advisor to be the one to make sure that they're communicating with the student. And then there are students who, you know, maybe they're a legacy at the school and they have a sibling that went there and a parent that went there and they know everything about that school. Then they aren't going to lean on their advisor as much for help kind of navigating the curriculum, navigating the social environment, navigating strategies and skills needed. So I just think it's so dependent on the student and what the student brings in and what they need. But I see an advisor is ultimately a person who can be a guidepost and a guiding like force for students through until graduation to say, okay, now this is the direction you should be going in. This is the year you are. This is what you should be thinking about. Here are some connections you should be making. Here are some activities you should consider if this is the field you want to go into, or you're thinking about graduate school. And so we need to make sure you're taking these classes to prepare yourself. Like the advisor can be that next, you know, mentor for students.
So parents and kids who are looking at colleges, I mean, just to know that there are so many different models out there is important.
Yes.
Because they may, you know, this is an area you want to ask questions about. How do you do it? How does each school approach this whole idea of advising? Because it's good information in terms of figuring out where you want to go to school as well.
And I would say for parents, it really depends on their comfort level. When I think about when I was in college, you guys have heard me tell a million stories about my mom, but my mom was my first call all the time. When I had a problem with lacrosse, my mom's never picked up a lacrosse stick in her life. She didn't know anything about college lacrosse, but when I had a problem with lacrosse, I called her first. And she would usually say something along the lines of, well, if you don't like it, then quit. And I'd say, well, I'm not going to quit. Like, that's not what I do. And she's like, then stop complaining about it and fix it. Like, to go talk to your coach. But I think as a parent, you need to recognize your own comfort level. And like, if Madeline, my stepdaughter, was going to consider going to, let's say, like MIT, right? Let's say she was super into engineering. I know a lot about colleges. I don't know a darn thing about engineering, not one thing. Mm-hmm. And I would say, man, I want to make sure she's going to have some really strong academic advising there to help her navigate what is, from what I understand, a very complicated curriculum. And I don't feel comfortable being that person to read that college catalog and understand it. But if she's going to a small liberal arts school, I'm ready. I'm not going to ask a single question about academic advising because I know she's got me.
Right.
So I would say it's a little bit on the parents to be vulnerable and say, here's what's in my wheelhouse. Here's what's not in my wheelhouse. So I know where the college is going to need to pick up the slack for me to support my kid.
With themselves.
Yes.
And it strikes me that while that's true, and there are certain things that are in each of our wheelhouses. College has changed since I went to college. Being careful that what I think is in my wheelhouse may not be in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And so getting a second opinion, you know, here's what I think, but check with somebody and confirm sometimes for those of us who are not professional advisors.
Absolutely.
Bring the experience that you do. I think that it really is important that parents ask, at the beginning, what is the model? But that helps really to understand what academic advising is. And then the other piece, because so much of your career has been in student success.
Yeah.
And so many schools now have, you know, as we do, academic success people. Coordinators or sometimes it's the advisor, but sometimes it's not. I know at our school, you have an advisor, and that's a faculty member. Mm-hmm. And then for some students, they work with an academic success coordinator as well. Mm-hmm. And on the surface, that seems obvious. Okay, you know, we want our kids to do well, and we want them to be successful. So, but what is the work of academic success if it's not that advising piece? Mm. What kinds of things, if as a parent I hear that the school has a success person or office, what would I expect that they would be doing?
You know, and that's an awesome question. It looks different at different schools, right? So when I was at Allegheny and I was working in the Learning Commons, that's what we were, right? We were academic success coaches. That's not what they called us, but that's what we were. We had academic success coordinators when I was at Curry, and when I was at Mount Ida, we had success coaches. And what those kinds of, they're often professionals, right? I've never seen them be faculty members. They're often professional staff members who have master's degrees, oftentimes in higher education administration or in education or in psychology or in counseling. And they are people who are there to help students who maybe are lacking in some areas of college skills, college success skills, if you will. And so a lot of it is helping students, you're looking to help students with executive functioning, right? So my student is someone who has struggled with time management, or there's someone who they've never had to prioritize assignments before, or things were really spelled out for them in high school. And it's going to be a lot more kind of free-floating in college, and they're going to have to take ownership over their weekly kind of to-do list. And they're going to need someone to help because they've never had to build that skill before. So that's often what college success folks do, but it's also helping students to kind of navigate the environment. Who am I supposed, I'm having this issue, who should I talk to? Or I need to go to office hours. People keep telling me to go to office hours, and I don't even know what I'm supposed to ask. Like, what is the purpose of going to office hours? Or I don't understand, like, it says on the syllabus that I'm supposed to do this assignment, but I don't even understand what's asking, and I feel weird asking my professor because I don't want them to think I'm not paying attention, or I'm not smart enough. It's often professional staff members who can really help a student in growing those skills that they need to be successful in a college environment that will ultimately translate to being successful in a work environment, right? Being responsible for your own success on a day-to-day basis is a skill that needs to be learned just like any other skill. And it takes time.
And some coaching along the way.
And some kids get it right away. Like I'll compare this to my 6-year-old right now, who there are kids in his class who are reading books. It is no issue for them. And there's my guy who is very slow to read. Like he gets very frustrated very easily. He doesn't want to practice. He doesn't want to do it. He has major perfectionism issues. And I said to him last night as we were reading, and he was like, well, Carter knows how to read all these books already. And why don't I know how to read all these books? And I was like, bud, like everyone comes at it differently. But that was really easy for Carter. Just like throwing a football was super easy for you. You started throwing a football when you're 5 months old. And maybe Carter couldn't do that. And that's okay. Everyone goes at things at their own pace. And what's going to be important is that you practice this. We just need to keep practicing. And the same goes for the college success skills. They have to keep practicing, and they need someone to guide them. I'm not just going to throw him in a corner with a book and be like, okay, go practice your reading. I'm going to sit there with him and I'm going to help him with it. And we in the academic success realm and the student success realm, that's exactly, we sit there with the students and we help them learn the skills and practice the skills. And then eventually our goal is not see them anymore because they got it. They've figured it out.
This is so much of what I do as a learning specialist, learning disability specialist, and a lot of it has to do with sort of being honest about what comes easy and what is challenging, and everybody's different. And parents with many kids know that each one of their kids is different.
Totally
wired up in different ways. So I have a question I want to ask you. I just want to make sure I get this in before you leave. I'm really curious about FERPA. and about, so that's the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's like two different ways of looking at this. You know, on one hand, it might be that it sort of protects the student's right to take control of their educational world. Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, it's also a way saying to parents, you know, go away, we don't need you anymore. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So how do you deal with it?
I hate FERPA.
I do too.
I hate it because I think too many schools hide behind it as a way of avoiding talking with parents and having hard conversations with parents. When parents, I mean, and I say this to the folks who work with me all the time, all the advisors who report up to me, when they have a student who's ghosting them, who's not responding to them, they haven't been to class, and we have real concerns, I say to them, send the student one more email. If I don't hear from you by 3 o'clock today, I'm going to reach out to your emergency contact, whomever that is. You know, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a grandparent, maybe it's someone who they lived with in high school, but we need to get someone else involved in this who knows this kid better than we do. And that is how I see parents. They have known their kid for 18 years. We have known them for 2 months. Yeah. Like, what do I know? We, you know, so I think it's another great question for parents to ask on tours and when they go to accepted student days and things like that, because any parent who asks me, this is exactly what I say. I say, you're a critical partner in this. And if I have a real concern about your student, I am not going to hesitate to contact you. And I'm not, I might not be able to give specifics. I can't necessarily say, hey, your student has an F in this and a D in this and an F in this, but I will call and say, I'm really worried about them. I'm worried about how they're doing. And I also say to parents, FERPA doesn't stop you from contacting us.
So and sharing you, information.
Yes. Yeah. No, it, like, we would never stop a parent from calling and saying, you know what, like, I talked to my son last night and like, I was asking him questions about his classes and stuff like that. And I just, he doesn't sound right. Something is going on with him, because you know when something's going on with your kid, because you know them and you can share that. FERPA does not stop you from calling and saying, I just want to share this information with someone who is there and can help and can do something. And then depending on the situation, you know, I would often, and I encourage my advisors who work with, because I don't work with students anymore, but my advisors do. And I say, bring everyone together. You get a parent who reaches out to you, or you reach out to a parent because I've asked you to, and that student comes in, be like, we need to talk with your mom together. Like, we all need to get on the same page here, because, and it's my favorite analogy that both of you used to make about the tripod. And I continue to talk about the tripod all the time. You got the college, you got the student, you got the parent. And if they're not all on the same level, that tripod's going to fall over. And so everybody needs to be invested. And that means too, that if the college is super invested and the parents are super invested, but the student is not, that tripod's still going to fall over.
Yeah.
Because we can't take the test for them. We can't go to class for them. But it's my favorite analogy that you guys use that I still use all the time when I talk to advisors and parents and faculty. Like, I try to encourage everybody to keep families in the loop on things, because even once they're seniors, we've still only known them for 4 years, whereas their families have known them for 22. That, you can't discount that.
And so that's another question that parents and students want to ask at every institution, which is, how do you define FERPA? And what are you going to do if I call you? And what is the situation if I'm worried about my kid? And, you know, what do I do? Because at least in my, you know, work life, I've seen so many different responses to this.
Yeah.
You know, there are some folks who say, I don't want to talk to a parent. And then there are some
drives
other,
me nuts.
Which drives me nuts too, because you know, we talk about the parent is part of it, but it's different in college than than high school. So parents also need to learn the shift in terms of what their responsibilities are, because it is a little bit different.
Well, and I'll say, especially for students who have any kind of learning differences, right? Like I have a nephew who's also in kindergarten, who's on an IEP. And so my sister has started going to IEP meetings that they have every other month for him. And so this is starting when he's 6 years old. And so she's going to be going to these IEP meetings for potentially the next 12 years of his life. Mm-hmm. And then when he goes to college, suddenly she's going to be cut way out of the loop, no matter what, like going from hearing an update consistently from his para and his teacher and everyone else to having literally nothing. Mm-hmm. Like that is a huge shift that I think we, as people who work at institutions, not only need to acknowledge, but kind of need to be empathetic to. Like I said before we started recording, like the shift just from daycare to kindergarten, I knew what Logan was doing every single day, all day in daycare, because I would go and I would pick him up and I would chit chat with his teachers and they'd say, here's who we played with today and here's what he did today and here's what was good and bad.
And now, sometimes they post pictures too.
Yes. You're right. And now just in kindergarten, I'm like, I'm relying on him to tell me what he did. I ask him every day, what was the best part of your... I try to ask good questions. I'm sure we'll talk about this.
Open-ended questions.
We'll get him talking. I don't just say, how was school, bud? I start with, was today a thumbs up day, a thumbs down day, or thumbs medium day? And then he tells me, and then I say, what was your favorite part of today? What was your least favorite part of today? Like, and every day, what was your favorite part of today? Recess. Okay, who'd you play with on the playground? I don't know. What did you play on the playground? I don't know. What was your special today? Did you have PE? Did you have music? Music. Well, did you sing a song in music? I don't know.
Well, you know, the shift from high school to college is the same thing in a way.
You go from what is a lot of information to next to nothing. And you're relying on this kid who you're probably texting with, let's be honest, not even talking to them on the phone, to say, how's it going? And they're saying, fine. And you have no idea.
So what advice do you have for parents in that situation who are really freaking out, who are really worried?
Asking those specific questions. Okay. Not just, and this is what I say to the advisors too. Don't just say, how are classes going? Because every day of the week and twice on Sunday, they'll say fine.
Yeah.
And I don't trust that word at all. And so I say, ask them about each class. Ask them, what's your favorite class right now? What's your least favorite class right now? And be open to hearing that. And don't push back. Mm-hmm. If they say, oh, well, I hate my English class because they make us write too many papers. Don't dive in on, well, No. Like, say, man, that kind of sucks. Like, what's too many papers? How many do you have due this week? Like, oh, that's rough. Like, what's your plan for getting it done? Like, you empathize. You don't lecture, but you ask those really specific but open-ended questions of favorite class, least favorite class, who you hanging out with? What'd you and your roommate do last night? What show are you binging? Like,
this is such good advice.
Is there a college version of who did you play with at recess today?
I mean, you can always, I love asking students, oh, who'd you eat lunch with today?
Yeah.
Like I teach classes for SNU, and that's like literally the only time I get to talk to students. And when I like student stays after a chit chat with me, I'll be like, oh, were you heading to lunch? Like, oh, who do you normally eat lunch with? Like, what's your favorite thing to get in the dining hall? I'm looking for something. Like, what's your favorite thing to get in the dining hall? Or like, what's the worst thing you had to eat this week? And that can be a launching point. And especially once you have established that, when they tell you something bad, you're not going to jump all over it, right? If they say, oh, well, the food was terrible and the steak was undercooked and I didn't find anything that I wanted to eat and I had to DoorDash and I'm almost out of money, like, rather than saying like, oh my God, well, we have to go and fix this, say like, that sucks. Undercooked steak sucks. And I'm so sorry. Like starting with that, like that's not great. Would you DoorDash? Well, how much money do you have left? have you talked to anyone about the food? Like, are other students saying that the food is terrible? Like, and then you make the offer of, I could call and say something to someone. Do you want me to? Mm-hmm. Or no, mm-hmm. I won't. And I think that's, I've seen my partner do that with our junior in high school a lot. When she comes home and complains about something, she had a math teacher she really didn't like. She hates math. And she just felt stressed all the time. And my partner, Shannon, eventually said, do you want me to say something to someone about this? Yep. Or are you complaining? And you can complain all day long. I will be your sounding board and I will be your venting person. You tell me if you want me to take action. Otherwise, I'll just sit and listen and say, I'm really sorry you're feeling that way. But putting that out there to them, that you're not just going to jump in and fix things, or you're not just going to jump in and lecture, that you're also just there to listen if they want someone to talk to. And let me know if you want me to take action. If you want me to just sit and listen, I'll just sit and listen. And I'm happy to do it.
And sometimes that venting is really what's needed.
Well, they need.
Lynn and I have.
We tell that story.
And I have often talked about, you know, you get the phone call late at night. And then you lay awake all night worrying about it. But they just need to get it out. Your kid has gone to sleep.
And fix the problem the next day.
Yeah. And then you talk the next day.
That's that good old 24-hour rule, right? When they call and complain, give everybody 24 hours before you do anything.
Yep. Then check back, and often it's water under the bridge.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
It's over.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you were awake all night. So, Lynn, I think you've hinted at this a little bit in talking about the kinds of questions to ask and all. And I think it's something you and I talked about a little while back. And you mentioned a book, which is really a business management-ish book, called Radical Candor by Kim Scott. And on your recommendation, I read it.
And isn't it so good?
It's very good. Yeah. And I was visualizing my students a lot through, you know, she's talking about a management perspective and how to manage your, you know, your employees, but it fits. And I think some of the ideas apply for parents as well. So I wonder if you could just, you know, touch on a couple of those ideas that you found really helpful. And we'll list this book in the show notes so people can follow up if they want.
I just had someone come in and do a training with our advising staff on radical candor because I thought it was so good to use with students. And the concept of radical candor is that you can't give somebody constructive criticism without caring really deeply about them. That is when the feedback is most likely to be received and followed up with, right? And it involves, so there's those who care too much and don't give any feedback, and that's called ruinous empathy. I don't know, that's like one of my favorite things. And that's what I think a lot of us in higher ed can slip into, is ruinous empathy, when we care so much that we're actually not willing to challenge our students and tell them what they could be doing better or differently. And then there's also people who don't care at all and consistently give criticism.
Lots of advice.
Yeah. And nothing but advice and very little caring. And so the sweet spot is when you care deeply and you give that really specific constructive criticism. And so in our advising office, we work for the first part of the year on showing students how much we care and on mattering and on relationship building. And that is, it's Schlossberg's theory of mattering and marginality, right? Mm-hmm. Is students, they want to feel seen on their campus. They want to feel cared for. They want to know someone not only cares about them, but cares about their success. Mm-hmm. And so we spend the first part of the year really working on that and showing students that we care and that they matter. And then we move into, okay, you know how much I care about you. And so I'm going to give you some straight truth right now. You are smoking too much weed. Or you know how much I care about you. And so I'm just going to tell you, you are missing too many classes and you will be suspended from this school. And I don't want to see it happen. So let's figure out what, because then they know it's coming from that place of caring. and they're more open to hearing the feedback. And so I think parents have this, you've got the caring down. You've spent 18 years on the caring. And I think reminding kids like of, all I want is what's best for you. My number one goal is that you are happy and successful in whatever way you see success. And from that, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like maybe you're not doing everything you could be doing to reach your goals, for instance, or not being open to hear what the kids' goals are. I was a firm C student in high school, firm, like barely graduated from high school because I almost failed a religion class my senior year. Don't even get me started. They had me take a meditation class at 7:30 in the morning in a room called the pillow room. Of course I fell asleep. But anyway, and at my Catholic high school, if you failed a religion class, you didn't graduate. So, and that was a religion class. So anyway, I was a firm C student in high school, and then I went to college. And so when I got C pluses, my parents were like, okay, like you are doing, they knew I could do better, but they also saw that growth. And then, you know, I remember my mom hung up my grades from one semester in college when I got like a 2.4, and she hung those up on the fridge because that was better than I'd ever done in high school. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't once I finally got to the end of college and I was earning like a 3.0 or a 3.4 on the regular. And now when I have my doctorate, like now, I made it to that point, but it wasn't because she was pushing me for it. It was because she was accepting where I was, seeing growth, and being willing to give me that feedback that sometimes I needed, but I also knew came from a place of deep caring. Mm-hmm. And that's radical candor, is like meeting people where they are and being honest with them about what they need to be able to move forward, but that it comes from a place of deep caring.
So Archie, I want to give one little personal response here. I could do this with my students, but not with my own children. So with my own kids, my anxiety gets in the way.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for parents in terms of, it seems like some boundaries are needed in order to do what you're talking about. Mm. And that's hard when it's your own kid or you're worried. It's like, for me, with my students, I can kind of have that distance and I can do it. Mm-hmm. But I do find it more difficult as a mom to do that.
I think it takes vulnerability from parents, like not to just be a typical middle-aged white lady and reach into Brené Brown. Yeah. But I think it takes real vulnerability and saying to your kids, I feel really anxious about saying this to you right now. I feel really nervous about this, but I love you so much. And I feel like I need to tell you, you're doing this thing that's making me worried about you, or you've told me that this is your goal, and I don't think that you're doing what you need to be able to achieve that goal. What can I do to help? Or do you want to just go at this on your own? But voicing it rather than letting it live inside of you, and also voicing how nervous you are for the conversation, I think normalizes it so that when your kid is nervous to tell you something, they have this model of, I'm nervous to tell you this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Right? Because like, you know, Glennon Doyle, we can do hard things, et cetera. But I think being vulnerable and saying, I'm just really nervous to say this to you, or I'm really anxious about this, but I'm worried about you and here's why.
Yeah. Oh, you know, such good advice.
You know, it strikes me that that's the way we behave. Well, like Lynn, you talked about doing it with your students, but not your own kids. Mm. And it's the way we are with other adults much of the time. You know, if I sit down for coffee with a friend who is having an issue or that I feel I need to talk to something, I'm more apt to do that. And so there's a little switch that happens, a gradual transition that happens as you begin to think of your child, and it's a really scary time, but you begin to think of your child as an adult.
It's a grown up.
Yes. Yeah. It's a grown up.
And so your relationship is a little more adult to adult. And that changes. I know, you know, it took my kids getting married for that to happen, but yeah. You know, then I had to, and they had the kids of their own, and now I have to recognize they're grown up.
But, well, you know what? And I would compare it to when I was going through my divorce, I was having a really hard time with it. And like full disclosure, I just wasn't taking care of myself in a good way because I was like, my mental health was so bad and I was having such a tough time. And it was one of my best friends who called me. Who I know I've had, you know, she's been my best friend for 10 years, who called me and said, I'm just really worried about you. You've talked so many times about what makes your anxiety worse, what makes your depression worse, and you're doing all those things. Like you're eating bad food, you're drinking too much alcohol, you're not working out, you're not sleeping enough. Like, this is not good for you. But it was this person who I knew cared so much about me, saying it so bluntly. She did not talk around that issue. Mm-hmm. She just said it, that I was like, oh man, like, okay, I need to make changes now. And that wouldn't have happened if she hadn't had that conversation with me, if she hadn't said that to me. And that was grown up to grown up, friend to friend. But I knew again that it was coming from a place of deep caring. And that makes all the difference. If some rando off the street had said it to me or someone who I barely knew, I would have been like, you don't even know me. You don't even know what I'm going through. But when you start with, I care about you, like I love you, you are my kid, right? Then they're going to roll their eyes till the cows come home, but they're hearing it.
Yeah.
But they're actually hearing it. Yeah. That's that starting with that place of caring is what opens up their ears.
Yeah. Right. That's so important.
Yeah. And I've had to have so many hard conversations over the years with students, students who were on the verge of academic dismissal or students who were suspended, students who were suspended for plagiarism. So I've had so many hard conversations with students over the years. And none of those conversations, I can honestly say, have ever been bad because my students always knew, and I would start the conversation, even if they weren't someone I knew super well, I would start with, I really care about you and your success. I really do. I love working with college students. I love this work that I do. I want the best for you. This is not going to be the best conversation. This is going to be really hard, but we're going to get through it together. And then we're going to figure out where you need to go. And then sometimes there's tears and sometimes there's anger. And sometimes it's, you know, somebody storms out or hangs up the phone on me, but then they always come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when they're a little calmer and they're ready to talk about it.
And that's so important for parents to hear what that, you know, it's not always on the first try.
Oh no.
And you know, you
it
are
takes many tries often.
You are a professional at having these difficult conversations with students. So your advice, you know, it's so wise and it carries so much. And you know, I think that's an important that may be an important place to leave this conversation. We have a whole bunch more questions, Lynn.
We're going to have you back.
Well, we do.
I haven't even barely started.
Because the part that we really didn't get to touch on that we really do want to talk to you about is students who are in trouble.
Yeah.
Not just a little struggle, not facing some challenges, but really... finding themselves digging kind of deep, and what happens around, you know, potential dismissal and what do you do and coming back. So I am going to extract a promise from you.
Yeah, we're going to have a whole podcast on that.
Yeah, that you will come back and join us soon.
Yeah.
And we'll do a whole nother conversation around that because
it's the hard
too
stuff.
Important to try to cram into a few minutes at the end here.
Yeah.
Because you have so much perspective to share and it's really helpful.
Yeah.
So, you know, to kind of wrap this up, and then we can ask you the question again next time, and there will be a next time soon, I promise, is besides radical candor, we always like to ask whether there are any books that you can think of that parents might want to look at.
This is the other one that I'm reading right now. It's called Relationship Rich Education.
Oh, I don't know this. This is new.
How Human Connections Drive Success in College.
Ooh.
Relationship rich.
Okay. Rich. We will list that in the show notes.
It is all about.
Who wrote it?
It's by Peter Felton and Leo Lambert.
Okay. Thank you.
And it is all about the constellations of connections that students need in college to find whatever their definition of success is. All the people who need to be involved in that. And how we as institutions can, you know, they happen organically, but how we as institutions can also manufacture that for the students who don't know how to make them happen organically.
Mm-hmm. And how, I would think, I mean.
Oh, parents could get so much out of it.
Yeah. And recognizing that students do have this web.
They need it.
It's a web. It's not a one person.
You know, I think we often think we send our kid off alone and they're out there alone.
They're not.
But there's
a web.
This whole thing. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's excellent. So good. Yeah, right. I love that book right now.
We're going to put that book and Radical Candor in the show notes. And we'll end for today, but we will arrange a date to have you
totally
back to talk about
the hard things.
So, yeah, you know, Lynn Zlatkowski, academic director of advising of academic advising at Southern New Hampshire University, and so much to share. Thank you so much for spending.
Yeah, thank
time
you.
With
it was so
today.
Nice to hang out with you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. We are so excited to have had Lynn Zlatkowski here with us today. What a fabulous conversation. She will be coming back, and we hope that will be soon, and just to continue this conversation.
It was such an important conversation that we know it's going to take more than this one episode. So, yes, we will. We have made her promise that she will come back again soon. So if you found this helpful, please share it with anyone else you know who has a college student or a high school student, because Lynn also shared several ideas about questions that parents and students should be asking as they're looking at colleges. And we know there are other people out there that might find it helpful. Don't forget to check out the show notes. We'll be listing the books that Lynn mentioned.
Right, two books,
yes, Radical Candor and the
Relationship Rich Education.
Yes, so they will both be there and a couple of other topics that Lynn covered. And if you have a moment wherever you listen to podcasts and you're willing to take just a couple of minutes and leave us a rating, leave us a review. Those are really important to helping us spread the word to other people and helping them find the podcast. So check our show notes on the College Parent Central website. And thanks for sticking with us all the way through to the end. Till next time.
See you later.